The following sermon by Jonathan Edwards is called The Wicked Men of the Past Are Still in Hell. 1 Peter 3, verses 19 and 20. By which also he went and preached to the spirits in prison and so on. Two things it is my present purpose to observe concerning the spirits or souls of those wicked men that Noah preached to. First, how long ago they lived. Secondly, how those souls are here spoken of as to their present state, spirits in prison. Doctrine, those wicked men who lived before the flood and went to hell in Noah's time are there still. I would give some reasons why they have remained in hell so long, and also observe in some respects in what circumstances they remain there all this while. First, the reasons negatively. It is not because hell has been tolerable to them, and it is not because they are convinced of their former folly that they have not yet been brought to their right mind or to their judgment of things. It is not because they are careless about their own welfare and ease, and not willing to be at any possible labors or cost in order to escape if there were any hope of deliverance. Not because they don't wish and long and are not thoroughly overwhelmed, and not because they are in earnest, that they are thoroughly engaged in their spirits, not yet disposed to own that the courses that they were going in were not good, nor disposed to attend to any offer of mercy, because they begrudge, they would be willing to lay out themselves, not because they are covetous, not willing to be shown. It is not because they were weaker than the generality of men, many of them were giants, not because there is not a great number of those who are disposed to unite their strength to burst this prison. But positively, their souls are immortal, made for eternity, of a nature agreeable to this design. Though they do desire it, they can't return to nothing. They can't seek death and find it. Extreme torment, but no tendency to annihilate the soul. There is a tendency to sink it, but not to reduce it to nothing. It is not with the souls as it is with the body in its present mortal state. Extreme oppression tends to destroy it. Number two, they are not in a state of probation. Their debt is what they cannot pay, a great debt to divine justice. They have not wherewith and nothing to pay. They are cast into prison until they should pay the last mite. Also, there is no gospel preached in hell. Christ did not die for the damned. He had no respect to that world, to those in this state, any more than he had respect to the devil. No means of grace. The means of grace are not accommodated to that state. No manner of provision made in any respect for their relief. No aid. Preaching of the word doesn't reach them. The prayers of the saints, of godly friends, can't reach them. The place and state they are in was never designed for the exercise of mercy. God is infinitely merciful, but the exercises of mercy are not forever, limited by wisdom in various respects. God has declared what the purposes of his wisdom are with respect to the exercises of his mercy. And as to the kind of beings they are, fallen men and not angels, his declarations are according to truth. His purposes are not altered. Hence there is no mercy in hell. Though their pain is extreme, God doesn't pity them. Though their wishes for deliverance are great, though their cries are loud, and they're long continued, because it's exceedingly intolerable. By being longer in hell, they have not become any more fit for any other state. Hell doesn't make them better, although indeed their judgments are convinced, yet their hearts are the same. There is no change in their dispositions. There are no conversions in hell. His wrath makes a great change indeed, but no saving change. The wicked in Noah's days were most of them very wicked on earth, yet in some respects they became worse when they went to hell. Not fit for heaven, not fit to come and live in this world, fit for no other place. That is a place provided and fitted for such. Also, the prison is very strong that holds them, delivered up into the hands of Satan, against whom they have no strength, and his cruelty is as strong as his power. And what is much more than devils, God confines them. Irreversible sentence binds them. Omniscience opposes them. No escape by subtlety, unobserved. Often here in this world, persons break prison by stealth. They get away by night when no one observes them, and God's almighty power holds them down. And God ever lives. He is unchangeable. He never will alter his purpose, never will forget his own son, never will forget his righteous sentence. Observation. Observe in several things and what circumstances they have been in all this long time. They have not been in a state of insensibility. The rich man is not less sensible by long-continued torment and misery. Hence he has not been deprived of the use of reason. They have had no time of respite all this while. No rest, Revelation 14, verse 11. No rest day nor night. Both day and night are mentioned because the night in this world is a time of rest. They have never been asleep, never found any resting place, never found out any assuaging medicines, any cool shadows, any cooling pastures, never found a drop of water, never found any expedient for mitigating their torment. They have had much to goad them in exercising their invention. Necessity is the mother of invention, but their inventions have not saved them. They have had nothing to divert them, no amusement to take off their attention. They have not forgotten things that were so long ago, or when they were on earth. Son, remember. They will remember over all at the day of judgment. They have not forgotten pleasant circumstances they lived in, how they swam in delights, how their lives were long, the wickedness they committed, the opportunities they had, the warnings. They remember Noah's preaching and their folly, the thoughts they had concerning God and his testimony. Their misery has not grown more tolerable by their being so long used to it. The great additions of people that have been made, the numbers from their time, has been no comfort to them. They have had no hope all this while, and they have none now, though their torments have been so long continued. This is verified concerning all that go down to the pit of hell. Isaiah 38, verses 17 to 19. They that go down to the pit cannot hope for your truth. Application. May this be of warning. Let sinners in these days take warning. Those that now live in unbelief and impenitence are in danger of this. Let me call upon you seriously to consider how long a time those who have been spoken of have already worn out themselves in hell. They have been there 4,000 years. How many ages? How many great changes and successions and transactions? How many generations have passed? How many successions of those who had come into being gradually grew up and grew old and then died? Not only have many generations gradually come upon the stage and have died, but many great and populous nations have come into being and have flourished and made a great figure in the world for many ages, and then by degrees have dwindled and wasted, swallowed up by other nations and come to nothing. And nothing of them now, no, but by history, some of them very ancient and powerful, so that even the very history of them has almost come to nothing and vanished. And all since they have been suffering the flames of hell without any cessation or rest. The world has been subdued. Many mighty princes have appeared and made a good bustle, and none whose memory is now almost forgotten. Very great and magnificent cities, many kingdoms, yea, many great monarchies. Those four monarchies of the world, how many things have worn out? The strongest fortunes, the strongest empires, the most durable monuments, pillars of brass, monuments of marble stone, languages used as the common speech of large countries. Such things have gradually perished, and length of time worn them out. But yet the torments of the spirits in prison yet remain, not come to nothing yet, are as fresh and lively and as in great of vigor as at the first moment they got into hell. The souls who are the subjects of these miseries were sinners, and their miseries immortal. Since they have been in hell, there has been a long series of wonderful dispensations of God towards this church and the whole world. After the flood, the nations degenerated, fell off to idolatry. Abraham was called. Children of Jacob became a great nation. Christ was foretold of old from time to time, anciently prefigured. And in the fullness of time, Christ actually came into the world. All these ancient prophecies and ancient types were fulfilled. The Jews, God's ancient people, rejected. Gentiles called. Prophecies were given. A mighty change made in the Roman kingdom. Antichrist arose, reigned for a long time, but at length the Reformation came. During all those mighty changes on earth, those souls spoken of in the doctrine continued without ease day or night, or 1 minute's respite, wrestling with the mighty torments of hell. And so they continue still. Their torment is not abated. These great and mighty changes on earth have not affected them to cause any change there. There have been many good times on earth, days of great good, but secondly, how we may suppose the things which they remember of their past lives now affects them. Their worldly enjoyments, the length of the time of their past ease and pleasures. They lived long lives. There were past opportunities. There were long warnings. The preaching they had, their folly and stupidity and obstinacy remained. How many since have followed their steps and have gone to hell in like manner? It is not the manner of men to take warnings by those that perish before them. Those that are gone before can see the folly of those that come after, whom it will do no good. The rich man in hell, those that went to hell in Noah's days, see the folly of those that come to them from generation to generation. But those that follow after don't see the folly of those who went before, and so they follow them. They that have worn out so many ages in hell are never the nearer any end of their misery. The time is very long that they have suffered, many tedious days, tedious years, and tedious ages one after another. They must wear out another space of time as long as there are in hell flames, and then another after that. Soon the time will come when they will actually have worn out a million such as, yea, a million and millions of ages. God foresees the time. He knows a particular passage of the day. yea, as many such ages as there are particles of dust on the globe of the earth. And even then, no mercy. It will be without end, forever, yea, forever. Therefore take warning. If you neglect to take warning, you will go to hell. And a time will come when you will have been as long as they now have been. There must also be their millions of millions of ages. All of the wishes and the cries and the strength and entreaties of yours will be in vain. You in like manner will reflect on and curse your folly there. The torment that those spoken of in the doctrine have endured for so long a time is but an imprisonment in order to execution. Spirits in prison, chains of darkness, there is yet another day. Their misery is great now, we learn by the parable of Dives and Lazarus. I know nothing by which it can be determined that the misery will not be 1,000 times as great. They tremble. The chains are strong. There is no hope. There is no relief to them. The means and opportunities they enjoyed were nothing to yours. Little revelation of a future state. God has an appointed time to wait on you. The spirit will not always strive. Consider the sudden, unexpected manner in which they were destroyed, Luke 17, verses 26 and 27. You will probably be surprised as they were. They had as much reason to flatter themselves as you. Job 27, verse 20. A tempest steals him away in the night. Directions. Number 1. Avoid those things by which the men that went to hell in Noah's time undid themselves, particularly their sensuality. Genesis 6, Luke 17, verse 27. So it was with Sodom. Violence, evil imagination, they would not hearken. They grew hardened to long-continued calls and warnings, habitually made light of them. Is there not reason to apprehend that this is the case with many here in this congregation? You must reform your life. You must have a thorough reformation. You must in this respect be as Noah was in the generation of those souls that are castaways. Particularly, you must avoid those liberties of young people that are customary. Another thing that has apparently become customary and doubtless is very provoking to God is pride in extravagance and apparel. Not that I condemn all adorning of the body. It is evident by Scripture that some moderate degree of this is lawful. Oil that makes his face to shine, Ecclesiastes 9, verse 8, Matthew 6, verse 17. But it is yet apparent that there is a most sinful extravagance in this kind, 1 Timothy 2, verse 9, 1 Peter 3, verse 3 and 4. This appears to be very provoking to God when persons go beyond their rank. One end of apparel seems to be distinguished, Proverbs 31, verses 22 and 23. Common people to show any affectation to be like those of high rank. Country towns to affect to be like the metropolis. When they go beyond their estate and disable themselves from paying their debts, deprive themselves of other things more necessary and more profitable, disable themselves much from deeds of charity, an affection to distinguish themselves in imitating the fashions of the more gay part of the world, complying with the general customs of a country in clothing is not vulgar. On the contrary, it is not decent to be singular, but some fashions in themselves are ill. Extravagance, very costly, immodest. All this care and pains and cost to adorn themselves shows persons to much affect outward ornament, and they seem to show that they make much of themselves, that which tends to encourage a general excess. Such things as these have been condemned by wise men of all nations. It is a time when the nations here have got to a vast excess. the land has become exceeding extravagant, more so than in England in proportion to our ability and ranks. It prevents great good that might be done. It's continually running us into debt. The main thing that brings our greatest national calamities, particularly the present state the country is in with regard to a medium, and is the main source of that general injustice that has been so long complained of. It keeps the country in constant distress, maintains constant injustice, and threatens us with ruin. In this town are evidently got to a great excess. Boston is more extravagant than London. And we, considering all things, I think beyond them, how far below we fall short in rank, in state, education, and our situation in the world, far beyond them. I had occasion to observe the people at Portsmouth and both the congregations in that place. That is a place very much famed for politeness, and is a city much like Boston in many respects. I judged the apparel of our congregation was fully as costly, many things that might make it proper for them to go beyond us. Excess and gaiety and costliness of apparel is a manifestation of a very great vanity of mind. It seems to show a great senselessness of our own vileness. Becomes us to go modestly. Modest apparel would better become such sinful creatures. Do not consider the end for which clothing was given, to hide our shame, that deformity that is the first of sin. Senselessness of what our bodies are coming to shows a vanity of the mind, as it shows the heart to be set on that which is exceeding vain and empty. Great lack of a sense of the worth of those spiritual ornaments that are infinitely more valuable. If persons had a proper concern for their soul, there surely would not appear very much affectation. If religion should greatly revive, it would undoubtedly make a great alteration. This is one thing among others that tends to prevent its reviving. God has of late awfully testified his displeasure for the extravagance of the country's manner of living. Number three, you must not only seek, you must strive. You must make it a business, a main business, a thorough one. How plain is the necessity of it? How often the Word of God, how plain by experience, how many accounts necessary, how much you have had to convince you of the necessity of striving to enter into the straight gate. And are you, after all, in any sense awakened? And how do you excuse this folly? The sinners of the old world perished by the flood, because they were not seasonable. They doubtless, many of them, used means afterwards. They knew they had need to make haste. So we are directed from time to time, make haste, escape for your life. How many accounts this is necessary? How many have we reason to think perish through delay? Not only engage in, but go through that great work that is necessary for your salvation in order to escape eternal damnation. Do in this respect as Noah did for the saving of himself and his house from the flood. Don't waste your time in halting between two opinions. To enforce this warning against looking back and fleeing out of Sodom, let me beseech you to consider the exceeding proneness there is to it in the heart. The heart of man is a backsliding heart. There is in the heart a great love and hankering desire after the ease and the pleasure and enjoyments of this world, as there was in Lot's wife, by which persons are continually liable to temptations to go back. The heart is so much towards Sodom that it is a difficult thing to keep the eye from turning that way and the feet from tending there. When men are under convictions and are put upon fleeing from the wrath to come, it is a mere force. It is because God lays hold on their hands as he did on Lot's and wives and drags them so far, but the tendency of the heart is to go back to the world. Persons are very prone to backsliding, also through discouragement. The heart is unsteady. It is soon tired and apt to listen to discouraging temptations. A little difficulty and delay soon overcomes its feeble resolutions. And discouragement tends to backsliding. It weakens persons' hands. It lies as a dead weight on their hearts and makes them drag heavily. And if it continues long, it very often issues insecurity and senselessness. Convictions are often shaken off that way. They begin first to go off with discouragement. Backsliding is a disease that is exceeding secret in its way of working. It is a flattering distemper. It works like a consumption, in which persons often flatter themselves that they are not worse, but something better, and in a hopeful way to recover, until a few days before they die. So backsliding commonly comes on gradually and steals on men insensibly, and they still flatter themselves that they are not backslidden. They plead that they are yet seeking, and they hope they have not lost their convictions. And by the time they find out, and cannot pretend so any longer, they are commonly so far gone that they care not much if they have lost their convictions. And when it comes to that, it is commonly a gone case as to those convictions. Thus they blind themselves and keep themselves insensible of their own disease, and so are not terrified with it, nor awaken to use means for relief until it is past cure. Thus it is that backsliding commonly comes upon persons that have for some time been under considerable convictions, and afterwards lose them. Let the consideration of this, your danger, excite you to the greatest care and diligence to keep your hearts and to watchfulness and constant prayer against backsliding. And let it put you upon endeavors to strengthen your resolutions of guarding against everything that tends to the contrary, that you may indeed hold out to the end. For then shall you know, if you follow on, to know the Lord.